What happens when a clumsy, self-conscious boy discovers he can become graceful? For one future neurologist, the answer arrived in water. Born into a family where swimming wasn't taught, but inherited, infants dunked in pools at barely a week old, swimming became more than exercise. It was transformation itself. On land, awkward, nervous, perpetually uncomfortable. In water, a complete metamorphosis into something fluid and free. This wasn't unique to one family. In the Caroline Islands of Micronesia, toddlers dove fearlessly into lagoons with dolphin-like grace that astonished Western observers. Their natural crawl stroke eventually revolutionized competitive swimming worldwide, proving that indigenous wisdom often precedes modern innovation. The parallel is striking. Whether in Micronesia or London, water offered an escape from terrestrial limitations. Even a whale-like father became graceful like a porpoise once submerged. Swimming became a daily meditation, a sanctuary where body and mind achieved a harmony impossible elsewhere. The pool wasn't just for exercise. It was a cathedral, offering a sort of ecstasy where boundaries between self and water dissolved completely. This passion persisted for decades, shaping major life decisions, including buying a house mid-swim and becoming what one swimmer called the elixir of life. The desire? To swim until death itself, a return to that primal state where thinking stops and pure being begins. Victorian London's grand museums, natural history, geology, and science, formed a vast universe for curious minds. One young explorer even hid overnight, watching taxidermied animals transform into uncanny creatures when darkness fell and glass eyes gleamed in moonlight. Beyond public displays lay the real treasures, study drawers with thousands of ordered specimens, and the restricted spirit building where scientists identified new species preserved in alcohol jars. The Geology Museum held phonolite rocks that rang like bells, and meteorites containing minerals found nowhere on Earth. The most profound moment came at age 10, standing before the periodic table, a spiritual awakening revealing an actual vision of the eternal cosmic order. These museums taught that wonder and systematic study aren't opposites, but complementary paths to understanding, shaping an approach to science that would later revolutionize how we understand neurological conditions. Dreams serve as sensitive barometers of neural health, often revealing conditions before waking symptoms appear. Migraine sufferers dream of zigzags mirroring their auras. Those with occipital lesions experience corresponding deficits. The colorblind lose dream color. Face-blind individuals cannot recognize dream faces. These phenomena can manifest symbolically. One patient's migraine auras appeared as nuclear explosions with iridescent zigzag margins. More remarkably, dreams can precede physical symptoms. A woman dreamed of imprisonment within herself before developing encephalitis. Another lost bodily sensation in dreams before actual proprioceptive loss. Parkinsonism often first appears as dream slow motion before clinical detection. During sleep, neural inhibitions lift and compensatory mechanisms disable, allowing underlying conditions to manifest clearly. This makes dream histories diagnostically valuable. Careful attention to patterns can reveal neurological issues before standard tests detect them. Unlike psychological interpretations seeking symbolic meaning, neurological dream analysis focuses on specific perceptual or motor patterns indicating brain changes. What does nothing feel like? When spinal anesthesia halts neural traffic, body parts don't feel paralyzed. They simply vanish, becoming nowhere to be found. Even sleeping on your arm creates this uncanny sense of part of yourself becoming inert, senseless nothing. Religious experiences during epileptic seizures can be profound. Dostoevsky described touching God during seizures as incomparable happiness. A century later, a bus conductor experienced heavenly bliss while collecting fares, only to lose his faith after subsequent seizures. Modern EEG recordings confirm temporal lobe activity spikes synchronized precisely with spiritual epiphanies. These ecstatic seizures share neural pathways with out-of-body and near-death experiences, deploying the same circuitry as actual perceptions, making them feel utterly real despite being hallucinations. These insights locate spiritual experiences within brain function rather than external reality, but don't invalidate their significance. What matters isn't whether someone has really seen God, but how such experiences transform understanding, revealing consciousness itself as a construction created by neural activity. Walter B. seemed ordinary until two brain surgeries for epilepsy transformed him completely. He developed Kluver-Busey syndrome, a condition causing insatiable appetites. He gained weight, became irritable, and developed an uncontrollable sexual drive that led to child pornography. Though deeply ashamed, he couldn't control these urges for 9 years until federal agents arrested him. His frontal lobe damage impaired impulse control while altering reward pathways, creating compulsions he recognized as wrong but couldn't resist. Mr. K, a 72-year-old fashion executive, was prescribed steroids for polymyalgia rheumatida. He secretly increased his dosage fivefold, triggering a psychotic break in Paris. His cognitive decline became so severe that doctors suspected rapid neurodegenerative disease, requiring placement in a locked Alzheimer's facility. When steroids were discontinued after a year, Mr. K recovered dramatically, recognizing people, returning to business, showing significant cognitive improvement. These cases demonstrate the brain's remarkable plasticity, its ability to change in response to injury or medication, and its capacity to recover when underlying causes are addressed. Alzheimer's manifests uniquely in each person, beginning subtly with difficulty recalling names and following conversations, then progressing to profound dementia. Yet patients adapt ingeniously. One with visual agnosia switched to digital watches. A former psychologist who lost volumetric constancy used measuring cups for cooking. The self proves remarkably resilient as abstract thought deteriorates. Many find comfort in familiar activities, religious services, music, gardening, that temporarily restore identity. This neural embodiment of self, shaped by lifelong experience, resists neurological damage extraordinarily well. Communicating difficult truths requires delicate judgment. When Dr. M, a former hospital director, discovered his Alzheimer's diagnosis in his chart, he wept. Mr. Q, a former janitor, maintained identity through familiar duties, checking windows, doors, appliances. Staff honored this, giving him keys and encouraging his tasks. His case raises a profound question. Is it sometimes kinder not to confront patients with reality that would strip away their organizing identity? Gardens proved therapeutically essential, normalizing neurological states, triggering forgotten abilities. Parkinson's patients frozen in movement become galvanized in garden settings. Those with advanced dementia still instinctively know how to plant seedlings. In our screen-dominated world, we risk forgetting our fundamental humanity. Traditional foods carry powerful emotional significance, connecting us to heritage and family. Gefilte fish, ground carp, and pike mixed with eggs, matzo meal, pepper, and sugar marked childhood Sabbaths. In life's final weeks, when swallowing became difficult, this traditional dish returned, creating poignant symmetry. The food that ushered one into life 82 years earlier, now ushering out. This continuity extends to our relationship with change. One aunt, born in 1892, adapted to jet planes and space travel, but couldn't adjust to simpler losses. "Where have all the horses gone?" she'd ask, having grown up in carriage-filled London. Yet certain changes prove more troubling. People walking blindly while staring at phones, young parents ignoring babies while fixated on screens. At the Toronto Zoo, pressing a bearded face against an orangutan's enclosure window created an unexpected moment. The mother orangutan gently set her baby down and approached, pressing her face directly opposite. Her bright eyes examined features before their eyes met in profound gaze. When a hand pressed against the window, she immediately placed hers over it, a greeting acknowledging similarity, creating intense kinship. The most sophisticated brain scans reveal where activity occurs, but not what it feels like to be the person experiencing it. The brain isn't just an object of study, it's the seat of our humanity. Press your hand against the glass. Feel the connection. That's what makes us human.